It's the Audio Drama Production Podcast, episode 99. My name's Matthew, and at time of recording, it's the month of October. In the US, the Halloween month is a time of ghosts and ghouls, of carving faces into pumpkins and going trick or treating. In Scotland, it's a time of putting fireworks through your neighbour's letterbox and setting their bin on fire. And though that might be a great way of scaring your neighbour, it's not just as easy as that when it comes to scaring the audience of your audio drama. You don't even know where most of them live, after all. Therefore, you need to use those metaphorical fireworks and matches in your arsenal. Dialogue, sound effects, and music. This is another celebratory show in the lead up to the ADPP's 100th episode, and we've assembled a team of audio dramatists from all around the world who are about to tell you exactly how they go about scaring their listeners. So let's not hang about and kick things off by hearing from one of the most accomplished voice actors in the medium today.
This is Tanya Milevich from Lightning Bolt Theatre of the Mind. I'm going to be discussing how psychological horror can scare the audience. I like to use psychological horror a lot in shows wherever the opportunity presents itself. The way that I enjoy really bringing the audience on the same page with the creation of the show is when I use psychological horror to make the character who's going through it believable and to make their anxiety palpable, to make the audience really feel the anxiety and the intensity of the moment. So for example, in The Swamp, which you can find on the website lightningbolt.podbean.com, there is a moment in the dream sequences that the main character experiences where she feels like there's no escape and like there's no way that she's going to wake up. She knows it's a dream usually, but this nightmarish world is infinite. It goes on and on. And no matter how much she tries to get to safety, this demon is getting closer and closer and closer. And it's about to grab her and yank her back down into the murk with it, drowning her effectively and killing her. Only that's not the end of the story. She knows that she's going to remain in some way. Some essence of her is going to remain stuck there forever, being its thing, its plaything. So even though that's fantastical and the audience knows that that's really not possible, they can identify with the feeling of helplessness and being pursued, where it's the fight or flight response, where you as the main character, putting yourself in their shoes as the listener, feel like it's going to get you. And then you worry kind of in the back of your mind, oh no, what if I go to sleep and have this dream? What if I end up in the swamp just like this character? What if I dream that I'm in some falling building, some dilapidated building where I'm being chased by a serial killer with a knife or a gun and I'm going to be killed? All of these associations happen pretty naturally with people who have vivid imaginations, or not, as long as you can invoke a very deep sense of anxiety within the main character and the helplessness that comes with experiencing a huge traumatic event or psychological horror, because that really is the most devastating feeling that you can have as a main character in a show. You can feel like there's no escape, no way out. There's no one to help me, or, you know, I'm going crazy, or whatever the case is in this situation. Because psychological horror really does reach into the deepest regions of the psyche and messes with the person on an emotional level and on the psychological level. And then, of course, if they're physically being endangered, that adds another layer to the mix where it makes everything even worse. So they're being affected on all levels. If you listen to How much do I love thee? Let me count the ways, for instance, which is also on Lightning Bolt Theater of the Mind website. There is a clear struggle that the main character goes through, who's suffering from severe OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, that's ruling her life. It's affecting her life negatively to the point where her functioning is impaired. And she tries to get better. She succeeds. And then this horrible thing happens and she regresses and becomes unpredictable. But you as the audience, when you're listening to the show, kind of see her getting better through her journey of opening up to this guy that she likes. But then you see her flashbacks, so you learn more about her as a person. And that kind of freaks you out because, you know, she's done some horrible things and you come to discover those. And then you realize why she is the way she is, what tendencies in her life caused her to react certain ways. And then at the end, when this bad thing happens, you as the audience knows something, a bad result or a negative result will take place. So the psychological horror is also about the buildup, as well as trying to have the audience identify with the main character and how they're feeling and have the same sense of anxious horror or dawning horror within the audience. It's like any good movie. You have to know what to leave up to the imagination and what to let the audience figure out for themselves, what to draw for them, how much information you want to give. Sometimes the less information, the more kind of vague certain things are, the better, where they get to imagine whatever gruesome outcome they would like to. I enjoy writing and listening to character-driven work. Any story that shows the complexity of a person, whatever character that may be, in my opinion, is very effective in getting the audience to identify with that character and whatever experiences they may go through, which brings us back to psychological horror and dread response. This really causes the audience, when they feel that they know the person through flashbacks, memories, and other interactions with different characters, makes the audience feel like they're experiencing this or like someone close to them is experiencing it because they feel that they know this character pretty well. I speak from experience. If a character dies at the beginning of a story that I haven't had a chance to get to know, I don't care as much. I'm just like, ah, well, what an idiot. They shouldn't have gone to the basement, you know. I called it. They're dead. So it's really a desensitized, jaded response. But if this character spends the entire story struggling for survival or doing everything he or she can to protect those he or she loves, whatever the story may be, some kind of journey is being shown, some kind of humanity, then I have more of a tendency to really identify with them when they're going through horrific times in this tale, whether or not my beliefs are suspended. I just think it's a lot more real. Not trying to bash jump scares. I think jump scares are very good too. They get you the first time. And sometimes if you use a lot of silence between those jump scares, they can get you more than once. I think it's always good to have some jump scares in the story at some point, because they get your adrenaline going as the audience. But I don't think relying on one or the other completely without experimenting with multiple forms of scaring the audience is good either. I think having a multifaceted approach is always effective. It'll get more audiences involved and hit a wider range of people. Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this discussion on psychological horror and scaring the audience. My podcast can be found at lightningbolt.podbean.com. P-O-D-B-E-A-N as in Nancy. Have a wonderful day.
My name is Casey Wayland, and I'm the writer and director of We're Alive. And my tip for scaring listeners in audio drama, well, it's not really so much a tip. It's more or less a technique and analyzation of how people get afraid of something or how they become terrified or suspense and all that. And I have to pull a page from the good old master of suspense himself, Alfred Hitchcock. And one of the ways that he talked about surprise versus suspense, and this ties into scaring your listeners in a lot of ways, he describes a scene where you would put a bomb underneath a table. And if the characters are having a conversation and they have no awareness that there's a bomb underneath the table, and then all of a sudden it blows up, it's surprise. There's no suspense to it whatsoever. But if the audience is aware of the bomb being there, then when they are carrying on the conversation on top of the table and they're unaware of the ticking bomb, but the audience knows, that creates suspense. Because now everything that they say, we're suspended, waiting for them to see what happens next, to anticipate when the bomb is going to go off. That is suspense. That is ultimately what can lead to be like some of the terrifying moments. And I think if you combine that aspect of it with an audio drama, the idea that it is not what you see that scares you, it's what's unseen. So the mind's eye of seeing danger and thinking it's out there and hearing something, and if you can combine those aspects of suspense and not being able to see what's out there, that is what's going to terrify your listeners. That is going to be like the foundation for what's truly, truly scary. And the last part about that is that there has to be something at stake for that suspense and that terrifying feeling to be heightened. Because if you don't care about the person or the situation that they're in, then there's no substance there. There's nothing at stake. There's no why should you be suspenseful? But if it's in a moment with a character that you love and you know they're in immediate danger, they are they're injured and the monster is at their heels and you don't know what's going to happen next, do they get away or do they not get away? That's what causes the terrifying moments of all this is you fear for the characters that are there and you are so involved with their story that you are feeling what they're feeling. And that can be truly scary.
Hi, I'm Chris Jarvis from www.radiotheatreworkshop.com. I'm writer-producer of the Elite Dangerous fan series Escape Velocity and the official Chaos Reborn full cast audio tie-in. Scaring listeners. I'm not really one for sudden shocks, and I've lost count of the number of times I've nearly died while listening to audio drama while driving, you know, and there's a sudden unexpected car horn or tire screech in the soundscape. So please avoid these for my own sanity and safety. But I think creeping dread and tension are lovely texture for audio. You know, it comes down to the characters. You create a character with which the audience can relate and invest in, and you put them in a situation which the audience already knows is dangerous. I mean, foreshadowing is a huge part of scaring because the audience kind of collectively holds their breath for the terror that's coming. I mean, on a technical, production level, I think audio drama can kind of both steal a march on movies and also lose out a little bit. I mean, movies owe a lot to old-time radio. I mean, they're just not scary without the sound. We know this because if you take the most, you know, scary film around and mute it, you can sit and watch the images on screen and it just isn't scary. But at the same time, if you take kind of an extended scene of someone, you know, walking down a long corridor, gripping an axe in terror and breathing loudly, that kind of doesn't come across so well for long in audio drama. We need to do things a little bit differently. And I think, you know, that hearing sounds we can't comfortably identify is at the heart of any kind of fear. You know, strange sounds in the woods, strange sounds at night. You know, if you're alone in your house and you're nervous about being alone, it's all those odd little sounds that you can hear that you're not used to necessarily noticing and you can't identify. That's what scares you. When I did drama in secondary school, I had a drama teacher, and there was this weird noise in the drama studio. And the drama teacher had convinced us that there was a mouse in the boxes that we were sitting on. So we all kind of got up and we were looking around these boxes, and we were convinced, you know, we could hear this thing scratching around and snuffling and moving. And in the end, it was just the curtains that had caught a breeze and were just scratching against the wood by the side of the wall. And, you know, that was kind of, there was a fortuitous lesson, not something the drama teacher had set up, but the power of suggestion cannot be underestimated, especially in audio drama. If you create a vague alien sound, it creates a sense of discomfort, and people are desperately trying to work out, you know, what that thing is that they can hear. And you underscore that with some good kind of emotive, tense music. And yeah, you create a scene where your audience is going to be holding their breath until you either kind of stick the knife in or kind of ease off and let them get their breath.
In the last episode, we featured a few clips recorded at the New England Audio Dramatist Meetup. So here's Scott Hickey of the Grist Mill once again.
I think probably the best way is, first of all, you have to have a good script with a good story, and then it has to be acted properly. A lot of old-time radio theater, I think some of the women go over the top, and they're blubbering and all that sort of stuff. I don't think people accept that sort of thing anymore. But I think that to make people feel frightened, you can actually, again, you tap against their imagination, because when the door opens and the scariest monster that ever was walks through, it's different for everybody. Each person, it's different. And you try to tap into their imagination, because the monster that they make is going to be scarier than anything you can make. You know, I mean, and that's why sometimes, you know, descriptions are vague. It actually goes, even like H.P. Lovecraft, when he mentions all his stuff in some of the books he doesn't really describe them very accurately. It's the same thing. It kind of push against your imagination so that you, you know, say, oh my God, it's you know, if I'm terrified of something with 10 eyes, my monster's going to have 10 eyes. It's not going to be the same for the next person. They're going to have 3 ears or 5 toes or whatever it is. And whatever, I guess if they're afraid of feet, I guess. But that's the thing. You try to tap into people's imagination, and that's the best way to terrify them.
Hello, this is Domine from Audio Epics, creators of The Will of the Woods and Witch Hunter. You can find our stuff on our websites, audioepics.com, on YouTube, and on Bandcamp. I've decided to talk about how to scare people in audio drama. I'd like to approach it a little bit from the listener's point of view. And I would start off by giving a little tip to listeners, actually. It's a very simple and obvious one. When you want to listen to a really scary audio drama, something like Intensive Care by Oral Stage, for example, my advice is, you know, don't listen to it while you're jogging in the park in the afternoon or playing frisbee with your dog, but listen to it at night. I know that's it can be quite daunting, but that's what makes it scary. So, you know, I think a lot of the power of audio is in how we consume it, where we consume it, when we consume it. No matter how well a producer or a writer or a performer creates a powerful, scary mood, if the listener doesn't consume it in the right way, then, you know, it's so much of it just gets lost. Now, being scary. I think that audio is different from visual media. Even though I've always said that audio is a very visual medium in itself. I say that not to crack wise, but because I really think that audio is, because it gives you so much, but not the visuals, because of that, the visuals become so very strong in your mind. And that's why I think audio is a more visual kind of medium than, for example, reading a book is. I mean, just one on paper. And this is because audio drama or audio books are the only medium that allow the listener to close his or her eyes and just, you know, enter this different world. And you can't do that with a novel in paperback format. You can't do that with a movie, obviously. And precisely because you can do that in audio, I think you can do very striking things visually in the listener's mind. So how does that work out for scary stuff, for horror, etc.? Well, differently than in a film, I would say. In horror movies in particular, it's very popular to use jump scares. You know, suddenly there's, you know, this weird creature at the window, and a lot of the time it is accompanied by, you know, a shocking piece of orchestral music. It's become somewhat trite, maybe, but still quite popular. Now, in audio, you can only go so far with a jump scare. I think it can work, but not by trying to introduce some shocking visual image in a flash, because that's just not how the human imagination works. You hear a sudden sound, and in order for that to actually be scary, in order for it to actually have an effect, it has to be a sound that makes it immediately clear what it is you've heard. Once more, I return to BBC's Lord of the Rings production. Sorry, guys, it's my favorite. I talk about it a lot. But there is a moment in the early chapters when Frodo and the hobbits are just going through the Shire, and, you know, the Nazgûl are in the vicinity, but they don't know that. And they're talking and singing and merrily walking around. And suddenly, you're in the background, you hear this horrendous cry. And they all stand still. And then there's just a breeze. It's a very simple thing. But it immediately creates a moment of tension because, you know, it's not like you heard something and you wonder, What am I supposed to be seeing in my mind now? You're in the same situation as those hobbits. Namely, you just heard a horrendous cry, and you'll wonder where it came from. What you don't want is to give the listener the feeling that information is held back from him or her. Well, that is, information that should be immediately clear for the characters. For example, what I think doesn't work is when suddenly a monster turns up and attacks one of the characters in the story, and what you hear is, no, you know, stuff like that. I don't think that works too well. I mean, you can use it, but it's not going to make an impression because, you know, it's just a bunch of sound. You know, what is this? What is this monster? What am I supposed to be seeing here? So in audio, you have to be a bit subtler. So when it comes to horror, I think it's probably a better idea to try and go for the more subtle, mood-building, mysterious kind of horror, like, you know, The Conjuring or The Exorcist, rather than the in-your-face, splatterfest type of horror. That wouldn't work in audio. In fact, in my opinion, it works nowhere, but certainly not in audio. In audio, because it's such a visual medium, more than anything else, you need to create a mood. And there are many ways to do this. If you don't have a phobia for narrators, I think that a narrator can do that brilliantly. But if you, you know, don't like narrators, then there are definitely other ways to set the mood, one of which is allow the music and the background ambient sounds to sort of breathe and do their thing. To sort of, you know, don't start a scene immediately with characters talking. Don't just focus on the plot the whole time, but allow the mood to sort of slowly draw the listener in. You know, and a lot of it can be done by just making the environment very, very clear, you know. We're in a wood at night, okay, you hear the crickets. You hear an owl in the background somewhere, maybe. There's the sound of a twig being cracked somewhere, and it sort of reverberates through the woods, you know. And then allow the characters who are walking through this wood to sort of talk to each other in hushed voices. Maybe talk a bit more slowly because, you know, they're on their guard. They're looking around. They don't feel safe. And as a result, the listener doesn't quite feel safe. That kind of thing does a lot there's so much to create, you know, an atmosphere that makes the listener ready to be scared. And finally, my last tip for scaring people in audio drama would be, don't try to be too realistic with the sound effects. For example, when you're in a haunted mansion in the story, you don't actually need to have the actual sound of a Victorian mansion in order to make it more real and more believable. Because I think if you actually go to a Victorian mansion and actually record there, I don't think it's going to be particularly atmospheric or scary. Except maybe for, you know, the creaking stairway. If it happens to be a particularly creaking stairway, then use it, of course. But what I want to say is that you can find a really scary-sounding, creaky stairway in a place that is maybe very urbane or very ordinary and nothing special, nothing scary at all. But, you know, put it in the context of that Victorian mansion for the listener and, you know, the whole thing starts coming to life. You know how Hollywood works. You know that the eagle sound effect that they've been using in every movie ever made isn't actually an eagle. The rats in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade were actually sped up recordings of chickens. And when you draw a sword in real life, it never makes that cool shing sound, you know. But I still think that Hollywood sound designers are right to use these sounds because you don't want realism, you want magic. And certainly in the case of horror, I think this is true. Just, I would say, in terms of sound effects, look around, play around, try everything. But don't be fooled by what things look like, because they may look scary, but not sound scary. Try to just listen to the sound effect and see how it works in the context of this imaginary world that you're creating, rather than, you know, the parking lot that you may be standing in, for example. So anyway, this is my advice for scaring people in audio drama. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you come by and take a look at some of our stuff on audioepics.com.
Hi, I'm Vienna Jetschko from the Vienna Jetschko podcast. It's Vienna like the city, J-T like Jumbojet, S-C-H as school, and K-O like knockout. And I love to write horror fiction. I'm not good at it, but I like to write horror fiction. And because of that, I also love to consume a lot of horror fiction audio dramas and stories. And I've come to notice, because I also, you know, try to get better at it, that the scariest stories kind of leave things out or to the imagination of the listener. You can do that by either just going like, you know, something awkward is going on or whatnot. And the best thing is kind of having an open ending. Like, you know, you don't want your monster to be defeated at the end of your story once and for all. Because that's not really scary. It's like, oh yeah, well, you got like half hour of an audio drama and it's easy to knock it down. If you want to make it super creepy, it's probably better if you just, you know, leave that ominous feeling behind, that, you know, not only can this monster attack your protagonist, but also your listener. And I personally love, on that matter, things from another dimension unleashed onto ours, kind of like trying to get into our world, either by taking over people or kind of being seen by several people. And then something bad happens to those people, kind of a sacrifice and stuff. You can find a lot of that on the No Sleep podcast, just for example. So yeah, imposing creatures that either eat your flesh or soul, or anything that's somehow related to Insidious or Night Terrors, those are giving me the creeps. Because, well, that's an actual thing. People do experience that. That's pretty creepy. Or anything Lovecraft related. That's also pretty nice. And well, if you know Lovecraft and you'll know, I pretty much featured all the points that his work is covering. And yeah, it also seems to be popular at the moment. Because that's the creepiest as you can get. And the good thing about audio drama is you don't have to portray the the creatures, just like Lovecraft is now portraying them in his fiction. And I think that's a big point, and that's a big point why nobody has really adapted or successfully adapted Lovecraft into a visual medium. I've seen comics, and I've been about 80% of the time disappointed. So either you get inspired by those kind of things I mentioned, or if it doesn't appeal to you or it makes no sense at all, I think you're just fine tackling your own biggest fear and try to craft a piece from that. Because, well, with every fear, the chances are high that somebody else will share that fear and understand you. And even if they don't, they would probably be able to relate to that, especially if you stay true to the nature of your fear. Because, you know, people relate to other people, even if they are not exactly afraid of the same things as we are. It's just, there's some kind of understanding for that. So I guess that's my confused advice on horror fiction.
Hi there, Mark Solinger, co-creator of Archive 81 and The Deep Vault here. So my main tip for scaring your audience, if that's something you want to do, you horrible monster, would be to make the horror dependent on sound. You're not making a movie, you're not writing a book, you're creating audio, and audio is really, really different. Things that work in a visual medium just flat out aren't going to work as a podcast. Horrific imagery, blood, guts, cool monster designs, great Kubrick-like shots, those aren't going to scare your audience. What's going to scare your audience is sound and mystery. And both of those things start in the writing process. When you're scripting out your show, you should try and make the scary stuff sound rich. So, you want to feature a terrifying object that drives men and women to madness. Cool! Instead of making it a book or a painting, how about making it an old wax cylinder with a song that speaks to the dark heart of mankind? Do you have a grotesque monster that's stalking your protagonists? Awesome! Instead of giving it a scary mask, let's give it a blood-curdling shriek and make it slowly drip pus onto the floor. You want to give yourself as many opportunities as humanly possible to create creepy audio. Mystery is tied into that. It's a cliche to say that audio drama is a visual medium, but it's true. The audience will create vivid images in their heads, but only if you don't bash your listener's head in with descriptions. Don't have the protagonist spend 5 minutes describing every nook and cranny of the monster that's chasing them. Have them say, "Oh God, the teeth! There's too many teeth!" And let your sound design and the listener's imagination fill in the rest. Anyway, that's my main tip in creating horrifying audio drama. Make your horror dependent on sound. You can be the best sound designer in the entire world, like my co-producer Dan Powell is, but you have to give yourself opportunities to showcase that. Truly great sound design starts in the writing process. I'm Mark Solinger, co-creator of Archive 81 and The Deep Vault. Have fun scaring your audience.
Okay, it's time to hear from Rich Wentworth of Hadron Gospel Hour.
How do we scare the listener? What are some ways that we scare the listener? Mike and I think with Hadron Gospel Hour, sometimes we make it creepy. I don't know that it's ever been necessarily scary. I think that because we're a comedy show, the closest we approach it is maybe some chills and creeps. And the way we do that is, I think, just, you know, we've tried to write, even though they're broad characters, we try to write them in a believable way and have them bounce off each other in believable ways, so that when something that's a little more high stakes happens to them, people get sort of emotionally involved in that. And I think that goes for our more dramatic moments. And I think it also goes for the scarier or creepier moments. A lot of the moments that we've had that are the scariest, I think, or creepiest come down to sound design for a lot of it. It's that balance between sound design and some creepy dialogue in the script. I think about our second episode, which featured at times Cthulhu and at times Satan. Again, it's a comedy, so a lot of this stuff gets played off as comedy. But I think, you know, we had some stuff that sounded pretty creepy, even if it was something we were playing off of. I think if we were doing a more outright horror vehicle, we'd probably spend more time on pacing or pace it in a different direction. Because we're a humor show, a comedy show, our pacing tends to be a little bit counter to that of what you'd expect from a horror or from a creepy type of production.
Hey, everyone. This is John Grills. I'm the creator and the voice of Ryan on the Small Tone Horror Podcast. I just want to say congratulations to ADPP on their 100th episode. I've said it before. I've never minced words about it. If it wasn't for the Audio Drama Production Podcast and the Facebook group, I'd really don't know if the Small Town Horror Podcast would exist, at least not how it exists now. So as far as my tips for how to scare a listener, I kind of think that you have one of two options, at least as far as audio drama is concerned, because you can't rely on the visual tension. Ideally, you have great sound design, you have great music composers, whether you use the free stuff that's from Incomptech or if you have someone creating original things, music and sound design will always drive the podcast, especially a horror podcast, as far as I'm concerned. But being a creator, being a writer, being a voice actor, I think it kind of has to end up on one of the two ends of the spectrum. Either you go extreme and just go all out, make it as scary as you possibly can or as gruesome in terms of the detail and the subject matter, and just go for it. It's horror. And as the saying goes, sometimes horror is horrific. And just treat it that way. Go take the Clive Barker route and just go all out. I definitely went more towards the other end of the spectrum in just the less is more concept. I tend to look at someone like Edgar Allan Poe and The Pit and the Pendulum, who never actually tells you what's in the pit. The narrator at one point, as the walls are glowing red and he's being forced to the middle and forced towards the pit, and maybe he's going to jump in there, and he goes to the edge of the pit and he recoils in horror, and they never tell you what's in the pit. Because anything that he can say, someone's going to say, oh, that's not scary. Oh, I thought it was going to be worse. So instead, leaves it up to your imagination. So you can create those horrible scenes, but you don't necessarily need to hold the listener's hand. That you can make the less is more concept so much scarier by not filling in the blanks for the listener. And as far as the subject matter itself, I don't think that you need to overthink horror. Just like I don't think you need to overthink comedy. You just need to look at it like, what makes me laugh? What scares me? For STH, it's concepts of isolation and loneliness. People that don't believe you when you're going through these really hard times. People not believing you when you need them the most. And then pulling it out a little bit further, the concept of that disembodied laughter, sounds that you don't understand. You know, a child's voice. I love my children. I love hearing them squeal and run around, and it's a wonderful sound just to hear them. But man, you take a child's voice and you put them in a completely foreign space and you hear that sing-songy voice, it'll scare the hell out of most people, scare the hell out of me. I definitely think as far as scares are concerned, try not to overthink it. Try and just look at yourself and say, what do I think is scary? And go from there. And if you're lucky enough to get great sound design like I have from Daniel Burnett or a great composer like I have in Tom Parsons, all the better. But personally, as far as horror is concerned and as far as audio drama production is concerned, I think less is more. I think having the listener create that world inside their own mind, which is really what they're already doing for audio drama, is the way to go.
Next up is Lindsay Harris-Friel of Yarn Saxa Rising.
It's the same as in comedy. Again, you're manipulating audience expectations of setup and payoff, and you want to weave that into the plot. But in horror and suspense, instead of giving the audience a reward, you're dangling a threat. Horror tends to have a threat where categories are mixed, and the result defies categorization. If you're being chased by a speeding truck, that's more like an action movie than a horror movie. If you're being chased by a speeding truck and there's no driver, then we're getting into horror. When I say that we're mixing categories, we're talking about things like being alive versus being dead, nocturnal behavior versus diurnal behavior, animal versus human, under sea and on land. Suspense heightens and draws that threat out. It draws out the distance between setup and payoff. And it relies on a mixture of hope, fear, and uncertainty. We know what we fear is going to happen. We know what we hope is going to happen. But what we don't know is how it's going to happen.
My name is Zachary Fortescom. I'm the creator of The Orphans, currently on the One of Us podcast network. So, tips for scaring listeners. When you want to scare a listener, I like to take a note of what you find in cinema, is that if you know everything and you see everything coming, then it's not scary. If you want to scare someone, don't tell them everything. Make them wonder what is going on. With the lack of knowledge comes a desire to find out, becomes suspense, becomes tension. If you tell them everything, if you tell them everything about how, say, a monster in your audio drama works, then they understand it and they're not necessarily scared of it. Fear comes from the unknown. If you see a scare coming in a film, you're not going to be scared of it when it comes. If you want to really put the fear of your whatever it is in someone, keep it mysterious. Don't allow it to be fully developed. Let it gestate in the mind of the audience. Let them make it scary for them. The worst thing you could do is throw all your knowledge of something at them. Give them something to be afraid of by holding back.
We're off to Brazil now to hear from Danilo Battistini of Contador de Historias.
Okay, this you have like many options. You can build up tension on your background music. You can also have jump scares for some occasions, but I don't recommend using it a lot on your audio drama, because otherwise it will make your listener do like, oh, again. So, and you want the scare to be honest, you know? I think more than just the scare jump things is the tension that you make him. It's like, picture your listener in a dark room with headphones on listening to your audio drama. You don't necessarily need for him to get goosebumps when he's listening to it. But on the afterwards, like when the audio drama ends, he takes off his headphones and he's looking one side to another on a dark room and he's like, oh. So mainly, I think background music is great doing this. One thing that's cool that's used on movies sometimes, like on The Shining from with Jack Nicholson, there's a scene when the woman, I forgot her name, she's coming down the stairs, and the background song is like building up huge tension, like some serious going to happen, some real shit's going down, and then nothing happens. So using that like once in a while, in a very while, it's something that you can use, that it gonna make the person like, isn't something going to happen? You want to give this, I think this is the main goal when you want to scare someone. You have to think on the afterwards, and you have to think on how he's listening to it, but not necessarily just jump scares like, you know, that terrible sound that makes everyone scared, but not because it's scary, because it takes the listener on surprise.
Hey, this is Owen McEwen. I'm a voice actor from New Jersey, USA. Here's a tip on how to scare your listener. Something that gives me the creeps is discovering a horror that has been there all along. A recent example would be from the Black Tapes podcast. Early on, there was a shadow figure that had been haunting a family and focused its attention on a child. But a video surfaced that revealed the shadow in an old video of a child's birthday party, and that child is now grown and has the child of his own. So the same shadow has been there all along. Well, that's creepy. Of course, Campfire Radio Theater is awesome at delivering scares, as is Small Town Horror. Well, right, so disembodied laughter is never a bad idea. Spoiler-free zone, but it's creepy. Dark music and eerie soundscapes are vital to freaking out your listener, but be subtle. John Carpenter's Halloween is a classic horror film that has scared a bazillion people over the years, and the soundtrack is widely regarded as a masterpiece. But one reasonable criticism of the film has been the overuse of musical cues to punctuate a scare. The Black Tapes has a lot going for it, but they can be a little heavy-handed with the music cues. So, less is more.
Hey, this is Daniel from The Night Keep. You can find me at nightkeep.com, where usually we just release some gothic horror symphonies and whatnot, generally around every October, just in time for Halloween. I just wanted to pop in and do a quick little tip, trick, I guess, maybe talk a little bit about possibly, you know, scaring listeners with your audio drama, just the essence of horror. My take on it, and again, this is just, you know, if you want, like, the way I look at horror, horror is more scary when you don't see things. It's the way I've always looked at, you know, doing my audio dramas and stuff, the way we do this, and whenever I write stories is, sure, I wish it was a movie, but we don't have that luxury, so you need to utilize the tools that you have available. Well, the beauty of audio is that you are using the listener's mind essentially against them, if you want to look at it that way. The way I see it is, I could make a movie and I could, you know, create a monster and everything, and that's really cool, and I could make music to go along with it and let it be all scary and whatnot, and I show it to you and the creature pops out, it's like, wow, like that, and it's, wow, that's really scary. But I can't make anything near as scary as what the listener can create in their mind. And so the way I try to approach horror audio drama is using just that. Give little cues and, you know, just small little hints and suggestions, either through dialogue or through sound effects, but let the listener paint the picture with their mind. I mean, that's it. We're doing audio productions and audio drama. You're giving audio clues to the listener, but the listener has to make that movie in their mind. So use that to your advantage. Of course, when you make horror, you've got your usual things, is, you know, you have to take things away. So in horror, you isolate your characters. If they have any kind of technology, remove that technology, block their cell phones, or just the way I like doing it, just put it in dark fantasy and don't even worry about, you don't have to worry about technology. But that's it. Just your standard, you know, things in horror, your standard tropes that you use in horror is isolation, lack of communication. Depending on your story, give the listener somebody to care about or something. A lot of time I fall back on using children because, as they say, you want to make something, as I've always said, you want to make something scary, throw a kid in it. You want to make it really scary, kill the kid. Have zombie kids. It just works every time, I guess. But that's it. Using your tools that you have available for audio productions and audio horror, you can use that. And again, it's the musical cues that I like to use that helps build the tension. Have you got a part that you really want the listener's attention and you don't want to distract them? Then no music. Cut everything out except for minimal sound effects and minimal sound design. Add what they call a riser, or, as if, you know, in technical terms, like if you're looking at your DAW, you set, you know, from the low octave on some tense strings doing a tremolo, raise the pitch slowly. And, you know, that helps build up the tension. Now, as far as jump scare sound effects, that's half the fun. I mean, we all know that doing audio dramas is, you know, you get to make your sound effects. That's the fun part once you get all the recording done. But that's it. Write your story. And just remember is that, yeah, we're making movies, but we have it so much easier and so much better because you're making the movie for the listener's mind. So just use that. One of my little taglines I like to say is, you know, is the canvas is your mind. And this music and story is just a real simple rudimentary palette of colors. And you let the listener paint that portrait. In my case, I like doing it in horror. But that's it. So thank you for your time, and be sure, if you, I mean, kind of like to hear more, if you want to know more about our take, visit nightkeep.com, and or just go to Bandcamp or Spotify and look up The Night Keep. So, thanks a lot.
We're coming to the end of the episode now, but any discussion about how to create scary audio drama wouldn't be complete without hearing from this man.
Audio and horror go together like peanut butter and jelly, like peas and carrots. In many ways, I think the horror genre is more effective in a spoken word medium than film or television or any other. Whether we're talking a full cast audio drama, or even if it's just a single voice reading the story. Now, of course, I personally prefer a fully soundscaped audio drama with all the bells and whistles and trappings that one might expect. But the audio experience just by itself is an amazingly effective tool for scaring a listener. I think a lot of it has to do with the isolation. Most people don't listen with a group of people. We don't, for the most part, enjoy an audio drama the same way we watch TV or a movie. Most of us even put in a pair of earbuds and listen, and it becomes a very solitary experience, even if you're not alone, because you're the only one hearing those sounds, sort of like a technologically induced schizophrenia. It's isolation, and that in itself is a little scary. In fact, it's one of the best ingredients for a nightmare.
So, we're stuck here?
We're losing light, and it's going to be dark soon.
Guys, I'm sorry. I didn't mean for this to happen.
Hey, it's okay. It's okay, don't worry. I think I can climb over the gate over there, maybe flag down somebody that can help us.
I don't think you should go alone.
Well, there's no use in all of us going.
Let's just crash in the SUV, get some sleep, and hike out of here in the morning if the gate's still locked.
It's gonna get cold tonight. Didn't pack sleeping bags, so by daybreak, we're going to be chilled to the bone.
I'm John Ballantyne, producer and creator of Campfire Radio Theater. Our stock and trade is trying to scare the listener. I've had a few folks contact me over the years and actually say that they were really creeped out by certain episodes, that they were given goosebumps or shivers by certain moments, and that's always enormously gratifying to hear as a storyteller. On the flip side, I've heard people say, well, that really wasn't all that scary. And this confirmed what I had always known, which was everyone isn't frightened by the same things. Part of the appeal of creating an anthology, though, is if I can't scare you this time, maybe I'll get you next time.
Serena, where are you?
I can't stay here!
What did you do to Mr. Roberts' body?
He wouldn't stop talking! I just tried to make him stop!
Honey, he's dead. Carving him
don't
up
Don't you think
won't...
I know that?
Serena, please, put away the scalpel. Let
Tori,
us
Tori, don't
away.
Try to stop me! There's too many voices here! Too many dead souls! I have to leave now!
Serena, you're very sick!
They're trying to pull me back, don't you see? They think that I know where it is, but I don't! I've never been there! I've never even heard of it!
This Twilight Road?
Yes! Stay away from me, Tori!
Put down the scalpel.
Don't come any closer! I'm warning you!
I've got her!
I can't...
Stay still!
What are you doing?
Just a little chloroform.
If you watch a modern horror film, turn off the sound when you get to the scariest scene. Chances are you'll find it's not nearly as effective at freaking you out without the soundtrack. There's no creepy ambient music score. There's no eerie sound effects. A movie without sound is particularly ineffective if there are a lot of jump scares. Now, a jump scare is the equivalent of the soundtrack leaping out from the shadows and yelling boo. Things are nice and quiet, and suddenly you're startled by something unexpected. It's a fairly cheap gimmick, but when used smartly, it can give a bit of a fright or at least a wake-up call.
What's that?
Shh, 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 shh. Somebody just started the jukebox.
Maybe it's the police.
Oh, should we let them know we're here?
I'm not too sure that is the police.
Who is that?
The most effective scares, though, I believe, are built layer by layer, with mood and atmosphere and a creeping psychological fear for what might just lie ahead, lurking around the corner as your story unfolds. The best way to do this is with a carefully crafted plot, casting actors that are not only good but appropriate for their roles, and using sound to unnerve. These are things that I shoot for. I don't always hit the target, but sometimes it all just comes together and you sit back and listen to the mix and think to yourself, wow, I almost gave myself a chill with that scene. And you may feel that way at least the first 30 times you listen to it. After that, you're more or less immune to its effects, but Keep in mind the first-time listener isn't. They are totally unprepared for whatever auditory frights you've assembled, and hopefully open to be petrified.
Oh, God. I've never seen the like.
Now old Jackie's up to his new tricks. For he'd laid aside the rugged blade used on Polly and switched to something what cut clean and quick. A long, thin blade, the coroner said, and went as far as to point out that he couldn't have done the job so neat, nor in so little time, so that whoever done it knew what he were looking for. Some say it were a doctor. Some say it were the devil himself. But whatever it were, poor Annie were gone. And this pub, right here, were the last place she drank her health. Or so they say.
One thing to strive for, and maybe the most important thing, is even though you're producing something that's obviously fictional, you want to introduce into people's minds doubt. Doubt that the story you're telling is just a piece of imagination, that maybe there's just a minuscule shred of reality there. And for a brief second, you introduce into the listener's mind the thought that maybe this is something that really happened in some shape or form, or maybe it will happen. Maybe, just maybe, it's happening now. If you can do that, even for the briefest moment, you've got him.
You scared?
Steven.
Are you scared, Alma? Huh?
You put that... Steven!
Whoops. Sorry.
It's not funny. You almost cut me. Just step back now. Steven! Steven, get back!
You know I'm...
Steven!
No, you know Steven, I'm just kidding around. Back. I'm just kidding around. Come here.
No, you stay away from me.
Here.
I mean it. Get back. Steven!
So that's the nightmare fuel that ignites truly frightening tales, in my opinion. And it's a lofty goal to aspire to if you want to creep into the listener's ear and give them a little scare.
And that brings the curtain down on another episode of the Audio Drama Production Podcast. I really enjoyed putting that together and just want to say a huge thanks to everyone who contributed. And if you feel like you know a lot more than you did an hour ago, how about saying thanks to everyone who made this episode possible by subscribing to their shows as well as giving them a wee rating and review. You'll find links to them all in the episode show notes at audiodramaproduction.com. Thanks once again for listening, and we'll meet again for episode 100.